We're doing the Toshot Aran. We're up to page, the top, we'll start from the top of page Chafvav in the Machon Shalem edition, Lamed Zayin, the bottom of page Lamed Zayin in the Mishor edition, page Samach Tet in the Mosad Rav Kook edition. Ve'omnam, ech kara ze lo yedehu, how this happened, I don't know. How does this happen that two fetuses in utero are finding it out? Ken safek lo nivru ha'ubarim ele liyot chayetam meriv umatza ad ki yatchilu babetin yilachem, because undoubtedly it's impossible that all the aforementioned reasons would cause these fetuses to start fighting already in the stomach. And manosim ken yesh latet leze ezo siba tivit mechayevet. So we have no choice. We have to give some natural reason for this, and this is the Ran's attitude, and this is one of the reasons why we're learning Toshot Aran, so you guys will be familiar with the Ran's philosophy, and the Ran's philosophical approach is, throughout Tanakh, let's find logical reasons for what we're reading. On different levels, different Rishonim took this to different extents. You have the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, that every miracle has natural explanations. It's just the time in which it took place. Almost every miracle. You have the Ralbag, who took that to an extreme. And then you have the Ran, who also, to a certain extent, will teach us how different things that the Tanakh tells us must have certain rational explanation behind them, to the extent where the Ran explains Mas Bechoros, even the 10th plague. When we speak about a great miracle, we call it otot, great miracles, and nonetheless, the Ran explains it to mean some kind of virus, some kind of disease that God made in the air of Egypt, as we will learn, Be'ezrat Hashem. So the Ran says everything must have some kind of explanation which we could understand. And so when the Torah tells us that in utero, Esav and Yaakov were fighting it out, this week's Parsha, there must be some natural explanation here. So the Ran says, it would seem the reason is as follows. Each one of these fetuses was the exact opposite of the nature of his counterpart. The composition of Esav, so his genes had more temper. His genes had more anger. His genes had more red. His composition was, he had a greater tendency for, call it the marash chora, call it the gallbladder, had more of an effect on his personality, the way they worded it in Chazal's time. However you want to describe it, naturally, he had a completely different nature and a completely opposite nature from Yaakov. Kesav haya admoni kulo kader tsear. Esav, we see externally, he was born completely red, and he was completely like a sheet of hair. Moral retichat alechut verova ashniyut. This indicates his redness, his hairiness. This shows that there was more heat, so to speak, more emotional anger boiled up within him. This indicates that his hairiness indicates other aspects of his personality, what Chazal describe as retichat alechut, that the a person has levels of heat that Chazal described. The way Chazal described it is a person's personality stems from how much different parts of his temperament are active. So Chazal described the anger and sadness and revenge and different traits as stemming from parts of the gallbladder. They said the gallbladder is divided to the black part of the gallbladder, the red part of the gallbladder. So by Esav, the red aspect of his life caused it was more prevalent. That's what was revealed in the externals. And also the heat in his blood, what Chazal describe as the potential for anger, they describe it as that there's a, so to speak, a lot of steam in the blood. Ve'Yaakov ish chalak, and Yaakov was born with a temperament that was smooth. Noach b'lechutav, his fluids were more settled, so to speak. that he wasn't tempered. Bilti ma'ale ashan, you didn't see him giving off smoke. So these were words that this was the way they described temperaments. And natural temperaments, I mean, this is the way they were born. It's not a bias of choice. And this was the way they led their lives, and these were their actions. This was the way they behaved. Yeah.
Are Chazal speaking figuratively, or do they believe that's how it actually worked?
It seems like it's a combination of both. Meaning, Chazal believed there's a certain amount of a person's temperament which is defined based on the gallbladder and the liver and all that. Yeah.
Is that true?
I don't know. You know, today science is still looking at what is the source of temperament. And it's a long discussion among psychologists and scientists. So where does a person's temperament come from? There's a lot of research. Science is looking at other directions to decide temperament. They're looking at our brain, and they're looking at other parts of us to figure out where our temperament comes from. Now, I'm not sure that one precludes the other. And I'm not sure that Chazal's descriptions are so critical, meaning I'm not sure it's so critical to go with whether it comes from the gallbladder, comes from the brain, comes from the genes, comes from wherever it comes from. The description nonetheless is an important description. Chazal described us that people are born with different temperaments. Esav had his and Yaakov had his. Esav haya ish sadeh. Esav was a man of the field, mevakesh atnua. He was a guy that needed action, always on the move. He can never settle down at home. And Yaakov was the antithesis of that. Playing, stays at home. He felt the greatest thing was to be at home. You know, you have two types of people. There's a guy who's ADHD. He's always got to have action. And then there's a guy who's happy to sit at home. That's his Gan Eden. For the other guy, it's Gehenna. What can I do at home all day? So these two fetuses had completely different temperaments, completely different natures. And undoubtedly, each one would negatively affect the other one naturally. When you have two opposites, when you have things that are contradictory to one another, when you try to put them together, so then each one tries to push off the other one. You have that with elements also sometimes. It's like taking you take lemon juice, you take an acid and a base. You take lemon juice, you put it in milk. One of them is going to overcome the other. The lemon juice will do wonders to the milk, or else the lemon juice will disappear in the milk. It's one or the other, but they're going to fight it out. So in nature we see this, that sometimes things that are opposing, that are contradictory, are going to fight it out. So in utero they had no place to run. In the world they could go their separate paths. But the Ran is saying that their different natures also affected their composition, their composition in utero. And that's a natural explanation, says the Ran, for the fact that Rivka had such stomach pains that they were, so to speak, they couldn't stay together, they couldn't develop together, because even in their development, the nature of one was being developed completely different than the other, and they were opposing forces. And that's why nature caused these two to constantly be flipping around in Rivka's stomach. But if this were all natural, the way we've been explaining, then why is it that God says this is an indication of what will be in the future of these children? So that we can understand the way we explained, because to say that two children are composed in such opposite form that they naturally repel one another, that's extraordinary. Usually, children have different natures, but you can trace it back to their parents. And if you want, you could attribute their nature to nature, to the forces that be. So then you could attribute it to the moment of conception, the moment of birth. So it makes the most sense that twins are going to be most similar. They were conceived almost identically, and they should have similar traits and similar natures. They have the same parents, the same moments of conception, same day, and same womb. At one time, even if you say they weren't conceived at exactly the same moment, nonetheless, there shouldn't be much time between the conception of one and the other to say that nature completely changed and they're complete opposites. מצורף שמערכת תרשום כפי זכות המתפעל ואחר שחומרי שני אלה הילדים שווים בהכנה. And yet that the idea that really part of it is affected by the purity of what's being formed, and these two were formed from the same seed, from the same potentially the same seed plus minus of their father and their mother, and איך תרשום בהם המערכת רושם מנגד כל זה הניגוד הרב. How could they both be formed such complete opposites? That's unnatural. I don't know. That's unusual that this should happen naturally. But God made this unusual occurrence to be a sign, to be a miracle, as to what would still happen with these two children. Ulfizota anachan, with this assumption, lo nitchalef mezeg hailadim eile, zulati kedei shiyore ma sheikre lahem, bebeten imam, ala motzot otam b'achrit hayamim. So then we have to say that what God did, that their natures were so contradictory already in utero, was as a sign as to what would happen to them in the end of time. Leman yidu haomdim bayamim ahema, so that those that were around in those days would know. Ki ken yiyanam kol yemei olam. People would know forever this is going to be the way the world's going to run. Esav and Yaakov are going to be contradictory forces in the world. And God wanted that sign. So even though it's not natural that this would happen in utero, that they'd be so contradictory, they'd repel one another, God made it so as a sign of what was waiting for the world. ואם תרצה תאמר, and if you want, you could say, כי רצה השם יתברך לשיט עשיו כלי זעמו על ישראל. Hashem wanted to make Esav, so to speak, his tool, that when Am Yisrael sins, their nemesis is waiting. Esav is ready to hit. ולזה תביאו על טבע מנגד ליעקב, and that's why Hashem gave Esav a nature that was the exact opposite of Yaakov. זמן יתנגדו מידותיהם, so that there would be opposing forces in the world. כי כפי הם תהיה השנאה והאהבה. Because when two people have contradictory natures, that breeds enmity between them. When two people have complementary natures, that breeds love between them. Hey guys, the Ran here said a simple line, but we have to remember this line. When we're dating, when we're looking for a spouse, sometimes we think we need a spouse that will fill in where we're lacking. And that's true. But we have to know that in order for a shidduch to work well, we have to be similar in most areas of life. There are small areas of life where our differences will fill in for one another. But in most areas of life, we have to view life the same way, and we have to have similar approaches to life. It doesn't work when you have two people that are complete opposites. She always wants to go hiking and he always wants to stay home. That's not going to work. I mean, you do need to have similar approaches to life. And the Ran over here in one line gave us a very important key to life. He said, you know, the tendency of people to like or hate someone stems primarily from the similarities of their nature or differences in nature. Mitzuraf, so he says, so created Esav and Yaakov with completely different natures, so that there would be these two opposing forces in the world, and so to speak, the staff is always waiting to hit Yaakov. If Yaakov steps out of line, he should know Esav's ready and waiting. Mitzuraf od, ki lema shi yada Hashem itbarach ke Esav ezro yiyu b'moredeyo, Added to that, God knew that Esav and his children would be the wicked people. Hit beyond beinyan yisneu ish et achiv lemanachik Esav me'al gvulei Yisrael velo yimashech acharav le'achvato. Hashem wanted Esav to hate Yaakov so that Esav would not have a bad impact on Yaakov. Hashem knew that Esav would go down the path of wickedness. Hashem said, I don't want Yaakov to have this brotherly love with Esav and then be drawn after Esav's ways. Umachshavot Hashem yitbarach amku me'od. So Hashem's thoughts are very deep. Meaning, we don't know exactly what God was thinking. The Ran gave us multiple reasons. He says, maybe this was an indication as to what was yet to come. Maybe this was so that Yaakov would always have an enemy ready to hit him to keep us in line. Maybe this was because God knew that Esav would be a sinner, so God wanted Esav to be completely different from Yaakov, so Yaakov wouldn't be drawn after him, even though he's his brother. But at the end of the day, the Ran says, we've stipulated many thoughts why God did this, but we don't know. We can't figure out at the end of the day what was God really thinking when God made it that Esav and Yaakov are completely different. But nonetheless, what happened to them in utero in the womb, that's an indication as to what would happen to them throughout their lives. And so too what happened when Yaakov came out of the womb. He's holding on to Esav's heel. That's a sign as to what would happen at the end of the days, just like the end of the period of the development in utero was Esav comes out first and Yaakov's grabbing onto the heel. By the same token, that's an indication as to what will happen at the end of time. Ki yatzav yado chesed ba'akev Esav, Yaakov came out holding onto the heel of Esav, ven safek shlo haya ze al tzad ha-mikre. Undoubtedly, this wasn't a coincidence. Ki bo'chiach Hashem yitbarach et Yaakov b'ma she'itchased imo. Because when God is rebuking Yaakov over his kindness for Yaakov, as we will learn be'ezrat Hashem in 2 weeks, in the book of Hosea, Hashem tells Yaakov, he says, ba'beten akav et achiv. Already in utero, he was swindling his brother. That's how God describes Yaakov. He says, "Babetin akav et achiv." In the stomach, he was already trying to swindle him. Ve'ilu hayta akava hazot nofelet b'derech mikre. And if this reference to Yaakov grabbing Esav's heel was a coincidence, ma yochiach et Yaakov ba? What's God rebuking Yaakov? He's a baby. What does he know what he's doing? The prophet says, "You know, already from when you were in the womb, you were grabbing Esav by the heel. What's it his fault? He's a baby." No. The idea here is that this is something that God caused. This was an indication as to what was yet to come. Mitzuraf. Furthermore, we have to say it wasn't a coincidence. Shu daval zal b'minagosh lolam. This is unusual in the way of the world. Ki aubar chalush akoach meod. A fetus that's just being born is very weak. How could his hand grab a heel? A whole heel. His hand grabs his brother's heel. But God caused this to be an illusion as to what would happen in the end of time. And that is, that when Esav's kingdom concludes, yitfos Yaakov malchut, Yaakov will take kingship, v'nimtza zeh ochez ba'akevo, it will come out that he's holding on to his heel. V'chen yeh ba'atid, that's what's yet to come. K'mo she'itnaba Ovadia, as the prophet Ovadia prophesizes, we know Ovadia was a descendant of Esav's, he was a ger tzedek from Esav, who prophesized about Esav. Ovadia's one chapter, Ovadia just prophesizes about Esav, and he says, "Vaya Beit Yaakov Esh, the house of Yaakov is yet to be fire, and he will consume the house of Esav, which will be straw." V'chtiv acharav, and then the verse says, "Va'alu Moshein Be'al Tzion Nishpat Et Har Esav." The redeemers will come up on Mount Zion to punish Mount Esav. Zeu shamru b'vreshit Rabba. That's what our sages taught us in the Medrash Rabba of Bereishis. Hagmon echal shal et Rabbi Shimon min elen de Beit Malka. One governor asked Rabbi Shimon, he said to him, "You're one of the wise men of the king. Who will ultimately take our kingship?" So he brought a plain piece of parchment and he wrote on it, afterwards his brother came out holding on to the heel of Esav. Amar, Ra'u dvarim yeshanim mipi zaken chadash. Look at these old words, but now there's something new that no one knew until now. Rabbi Shimon brought him a cloth and he just wrote him the story that it says in our parsha. He says he's holding on to the heel. So we see that the idea that Yaakov held on to Esav's heel was referring to a concept that's yet to come. Lo mikre kore, it wasn't just a coincidence. Hashem betochotav li Yaakov ma she'akav achiv. We find Hashem, when he rebukes Yaakov over holding on to his brother's heel, Hashem is telling him, you should know, this wasn't a coincidence. Kmo she'ezkir ki Sarah et Elokim beono. It was God's cause, just as Hashem continues and says, I gave you the strength to overcome Esav's angel. And so Hashem says, I gave you the capacity to hold on to Esav's heel, I gave you the capacity to overcome his angels, and what have you done? So we see Hashem is telling us that Yaakov's holding on to the heel was God's doing, with a clear indication as to where things are headed, that ultimately Yaakov will hold on to the heel. And Be'ezrat Hashem will pick up next week with an understanding of Yaakov's victory against the angel. Be'ezrat Hashem.